This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. On New Year's Day 2012, Alpha Cabeja was involved in a serious bike accident that left him unconscious on the side of the road in North London. A CT scan at the hospital revealed a severe brain injury. His doctors decided to induce coma while they worked to relieve the intense swelling in his brain. They told his family he might wake up with memory loss, unable to remember his life before the accident or even who he was. But when Cabeja finally woke up, he remembered a lot. The problem was the memories were fiction. Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie is a freelance writer who wrote about the man with the made-up memories for the Boston Globe Ideas section. And she's joining us from London via Skype. Linda, great to have you back with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So amnesia does seem like a likely scenario for this kind of injury, but his case was a bit different. What did he remember?
His case was definitely different. He had three very distinct memories that were sort of the big memories that came out of this incident. The first one was that his girlfriend at the time was pregnant with twins. The second one was that the day of the accident, he had been cycling from a job interview at MI6. And he was pretty sure that he got the job. He remembered the name of the man who he'd been interviewing with, a man called Michael Mitchells. And he thought, definitely, he got the job. So he was pretty excited about that. And he also remembered that he owned a small private plane. And he remembered that he'd been taken to the hospital in the plane.
So none of these were real?
None of these were real. And he says that he's very clear about it. They felt real to him. So he does acknowledge that people might think that it was a dream, but he says it's a memory in the same way that, you know, we all have memories. It's a real and actual memory.
So how long did he believe that these false memories, which the people around him could attest to, didn't have a plane, didn't work for MI6, not pregnant with twins, how long did he believe they were real?
He believed in the truth of his memories for about 6 months after the accident, which is quite a long time, especially when several elements of his memories were demonstrably false. You know, for example, his girlfriend hadn't had the twins yet.
But were people trying to correct him or going along with it?
People weren't. He said that people were really kind of just letting him go along with it. He said that nobody wanted to challenge him on it. And he thinks that it was largely because, you know, he's just had a massive, massive brain injury. I mean, he lost part of his brain. He had a partial lobectomy. He has a metal plate in his skull. I mean, it was a very, very serious accident. So in the weeks and months after the accident, things were already pretty jumbled up in his head. I mean, his short-term memory was gone. I had a very difficult time sort of remembering, you know, things that he was doing. He was very easily distracted. And so he kind of thought, he thinks that his family and friends weren't challenging him on it because he had a lot of other stuff going on already. And he realized, though, that these memories weren't true when he called the offices of MI6 and said that he'd had an interview there on the 1st of January. And he says that the person on the other end of the phone told him that couldn't be possible because the offices weren't open that day. And he hung up the phone and he opened his laptop and he started to search for things like this, you know, made up memories, false memories, because he started to kind of get it at that point that maybe something wasn't quite right and things started to kind of unravel.
Well, psychologists, neurologists today, how do they explain what happened? What caused his mind to construct these false memories?
Well, I think one of the really interesting things about this is that Cabeja's situation is very extreme, but we all fabricate memories all the time. This is how we make memory. So in his case, his psychologist at the time suggested that it may have been because his brain was presented with this gap of time when he was in the coma, that it filled with these sort of false connections. What happens when we make a memory is we kind of create these neural networks, these networks of neurons, where each of these little bits of memory are stored. So, you know, there's a neuron over here that represents the feeling of tucking the ultrasound picture into a notebook, which is one of the things that he remembered doing. The neuron over there remembers the names that you've chosen and how you felt when you saw your girlfriend's belly swelling with a baby. And so all of these neurons come together to create a network. And sometimes, though, when something like a very traumatic brain injury happens, that network can be disturbed. It's disrupted. And so the connections are remade in ways that make sense to the individual, but don't necessarily correspond with reality. And that's basically what happened here.
Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie is with us. She wrote about a man who had a traumatic brain injury and woke up with well-formed but fictitious memories. His condition is not altogether uncommon and could teach neurologists and psychologists more about how the memory works. So we tend to think that our memories of our lives are accurate. I mean, we kind of record them and file them away in little file boxes and retrieve them when we need to, and that they don't change. Is this not the case? Is that not how memories work?
That's not how memories work, although you would be in definitely good company with all of the other people who believe that. There's a study in 2011 that showed that about 63% of the people surveyed believed that memory works like a video camera, that we sort of play these moments back later. But in reality, memory is a constructive process. It's a reconstructive process. When we talk about making memories, we're a lot more accurate and real than we know. When we think of a memory that we have, right, it's a sort of compressed, edited, sometimes embellished version of what may have happened. You know, so one of the examples that one of the memory researchers that I talked to gave me was like, say you were at a dinner party a couple nights ago, and you probably had a really interesting conversation with the man sitting to your left, and you probably remember what he did. You can, you know, maybe remember sort of what his hair looked like, maybe the color of his hair. And you probably remember that he was wearing a shirt. But if I were to say, what color was his shirt? That might not be a memory that you have, but you know he was wearing a shirt. So in your memory, in your sort of mental picture of this dinner party, he's wearing a shirt. He's not naked. You definitely would remember that. It's things like that. We confabulate these little things all the time. We fill in details. We compress things. You know, we don't remember every minute of every day. We edit out stuff that either is just not important or is, although that's not a very good sort of rule when it comes to memory making, because obviously we forget important stuff all the time. Like, I can never remember when my wedding anniversary is. I'm really bad like that.
Yes, in couples, this comes up a lot, I've noticed. So people want to believe that their memories are accurate. Is that what was kind of happening for someone like Kabeja? You know, we get invested in this idea that they're true.
Absolutely. I mean, he really did want to believe. And I think there are a number of researchers who've hit upon this notion that when you make a memory, you're in some ways telling a narrative about yourself to yourself. A memory isn't exactly accurate in the sense that it's a true recording of the events as they happened, but rather it's about what's important to you, your desires, whether those are conscious or non-conscious. It's about how you tell the story about yourself to yourself. And so Kabeja likes to think that the seeds of these memories that he had were already in his, what he calls his subconscious. You know, they were already there. You know, a number of his friends were having children. He said that twins run in his family, and he did have a girlfriend. And, you know, he did apply for a job at MI6. He did always want a plane. And so those were coming back together and knitting themselves together in ways that worked for his brain. Now, you know, he also thinks that these memories kind of helped him get better faster, that he sort of had something in some ways to look forward to, but also he was telling himself, you know, I'm going to have twins. I need to be on the exercise bike doing therapy. I need to be really working hard to get myself back to where I was. So in some ways it is definitely, you know, those memories worked for him in a way that, In some ways, we make memories all the time work for ourselves.
Or not work. You know, like in the case of trauma, when people are repeating this memory that happened over and over and over to them, is there a way that doctors, researchers, scientists can use these kinds of injuries to help get a better understanding of how memory works?
They're really useful to highlight. In sort of extreme cases, I think, can really highlight the way we do things normally. But also, when something is sort of obviously wrong, you can kind of figure out where it got broken, what's happening. So he's definitely, you know, his memory is unusual. He's certainly not the only person who has had things like this happen. And interestingly, I think, and this may be a little bit of an aside, but one of the things that I really enjoyed hearing about in this story was that he wanted to look on these memories. He is a very positive person himself, generally. And he looks at these memories positively, but there are other people who have had similar fictional memories that tend to be from a very negative place. Mm-hmm. So, people who, perpetually confabulate memories that maybe their coworkers are out to get them, or they remember arguments that never happened. There are incidents of that happening. So all of these things though, kind of come together and show how brains make memory, how we make memories, and how we make those memories to suit ourselves and our own needs less than we want them to suit sort of an accurate record of history.
Hmm. How is Kabeja doing now?
He seems to be doing really well. He's actually training for the Paralympics. He's on the Paralympic sailing team.
Wow.
He said that he got into sailing when he went to this sort of open day. There was a Paralympic event trying to get people involved in sport. And there were a number of stalls there. And he thought that it would be really fitting if he got back into cycling, given his accident. He thought it would be just the right end to his story. But he was walking past the sailing stall, and the guy noticed that he was wearing a pair of boat shoes. And so they just started having a conversation, and he got really interested in it. And since then he's been sailing, and he's going to be hopefully on Team GB, next time around.
Well, great, great ending to a pretty traumatic beginning story. Linda, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie. She's a freelance writer and author of Princesses Behaving Badly. We talked with her about the article, The Man with the Made-Up Memories, which she wrote for the Boston Globe Ideas section. You'll find a link to read it at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.